to the November 16, 2022 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District. We always start with our flag salute. Director Corona, would you like to lead us this morning?
Please place the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could I ask the board secretary to read the procedures for attending our meeting virtually and then to call the roll of the board of directors?
Yes, of course, President Pauley. The following are the EMWD guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute your device during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. Roll call?
Yes.
President Pauley?
Present.
Director Record? Absent. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
And we have legal counsel in the room.
Very good. Thank you so much with that. April, has anyone submitted a card to do public comment for our meeting this morning?
At this time.
Very good. With that, we will go to item two on our agenda, which is executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. First off, President Pauley, I wanted to congratulate Director Corona on his
Absolutely.
Successful reelection. To our continued partnership and working with you, Dr. Corona. My report is included in your packet. First off, I wanted to share with the board that this week, President Pauley, Jolene Walsh, myself, and the Vanscoyuc team had a really successful in-person advocacy meetings back in Washington, D.C. We had an opportunity to meet with Congressman Calvert, Congressman Takano, and Congressman Issa, as well as representatives from Senator Feinstein and Padilla's office and Congressman Ruiz. We also met with the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, the Army Corps of Engineers, the EPA, and other agencies. We had the opportunity to advocate on behalf of our communities and our ratepayers, requesting additional funding for our desalinization program, for our purified water replenishment efforts, as well as discussing regulations relative to PFAS and other issues. So overall, a very busy couple of days back in D.C., but really fruitful conversations that we had with our representatives. Next item, I wanted to share with the board that last week the Metropolitan Water District had a conversation regarding Met's water supply and drought management efforts, and specifically the focus of the discussion was the water supply and potential shortage allocation for 2023. As you're aware, Metropolitan has put forward, along with the other Colorado River users, a proposal to the Department of Interior to reduce their allocation on the Colorado River by approximately 400,000. As such, there will be conversations that will occur at Metropolitan over the next several months about a potential region-wide reduction in water use. Along those lines, I did have an opportunity to talk to the Metropolitan General Manager, and I shared our perspective in terms of that we, along with other agencies, have, in fact, done a great deal in terms of conservation, water use efficiency, and frankly, our usage has dramatically been reduced over the last many years. So any potential path forward on shortage allocation needs to consider those agencies that have already made significant contributions in water use efficiency. And he was receptive to that, and I believe his early indications are that any type of shortage allocation going forward would have to consider each agency's investments that they have made. It will not be, for example, a draconian approach. As you're aware, certain parts of Southern California that are dependent exclusively on the state water project have been under restrictions to one-day outdoor watering or volumetric limitations. That's associated with the state water project. We obviously have other resources, including stored water at Diamond Valley Lake and Colorado River, as well as local supplies. So there's a difference, in my opinion, as far as the shortage allocation going forward. But I wanted to make this board aware that those conversations are being held at Metropolitan, and there will likely be some request going forward that next year we may have to curtail our demands. Of course, this is all subject to how this winter evolves and whether we do have a significant snowpack up in the Sierra. So we'll keep you posted as those discussions are advanced. Next, I wanted to share with the board that last week we were informed by River South County staff that they would like to provide EMWD with an additional $12.8 million in American Rescue Plan funding. This is in addition to the previous funding by the county of over $15 million. So in total, it's approaching $29 million of ARPA funding from the county. As you're aware also, we have secured $3 million from the city of Marietta as well. So with this round of ARPA funding, the projects that have been advanced by us and agreed upon with the county, at least with the staff so far, are six projects located in Supervisor Jeffrey's division in Meade Valley and Good Hope area, as well as Supervisor Hewitt's district. One of the projects that Supervisor Jeffries has requested that we advance is extension of a sewer along Ellis Avenue to serve future growth and development needs within the Highway 74 area. And the county's actually proposed to fund 100% of that sewer extension. So in discussing this matter further with President Pauley, we're scheduling a meeting with Supervisor Jeffries and the county team to further explore their proposal to fund the projects and come up with a plan going forward. But we're very pleased with where this is going, and we're very excited about our continued partnership with the County of Riverside. Under items of interest to the board, on November 2nd, Director Corona, staff from EMWD, and the City of Marietta held a community meeting for the Marietta Northern Keyhole area. And as the board is aware, this is an area that's immediately north of Clinton Keith Road and on the northern side, bounded by Baxter. It's about 320 acres that is not currently part of our service area, but there's significant interest in annexing into EMWD. So we work closely with the City of Marietta to facilitate a conversation with the developers and the community residents about potentially how the annexation process would work, the sewer infrastructure that would be needed, the water infrastructure, and frankly also the road network that would have to be established by the city so that utilities can be located. It was a really good conversation. There was a lot of interest. We will follow up with the developers in the area as well as the city. We'll have a follow-up conversation on how potentially can we move this forward. And we'll also need to talk about funding strategies, whether that's a CFD or an assessment district or oversizing. So there's a number of things that we need to define further. But overall, it was a very good conversation, a very good meeting that we had with the Marietta community. Next item under items of interest, wanted you to be aware that in late October, the State Water Resources Control Board did issue notification levels and response levels for a PFAS variant, PFHXS. It's one of the many variants under the PFAS group of chemicals. And the notification level is 3 parts per trillion, and the response level is 20 parts per trillion. Now, we have tested for that chemical in our water sources, and we do not exceed the notification level. And we will continue monitoring our sources of supply, but I just want you to be aware that we're aware of the new regulations. We've tested our water sources, and we are below the notification level at this time. Finally, I wanted to share with the board that over the last few months, we've noticed an uptick in our injury rates and safety issues or incidents, I should say. And to that point, I've coordinated closely with the management team as well as our risk and safety management, and we have decided that this afternoon we will have a safety stand-down for our employees, essentially take a couple of hours to sit down and discuss and get their feedback and have an open dialogue about how important safety is to this organization and what can we do to further provide the necessary training, the necessary resources, and get feedback from them that we can take back and basically recalibrate. As you know, safety is a big part of what we do. We want to make certain all of our employees go back home every day safely. So, again, this is going to be one of a number of efforts that we're going to undertake as a management team to make sure our employees are always safe and I just want you to be aware of that. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Questions? Director Armstrong.
Joe, you may have covered this before, but with relation to Metropolitan and their member agencies and those member agencies that are only receiving the state water, are there plans to kind of fix that within Met in the future so that it's more integrated so they can get Colorado River water? And
yes, there are plans to invest in the infrastructure improvements that are needed, specifically for some of the member agencies to have access more to stored water, be it in Diamond Valley Lake or other stored water. But those plans are going to need time for implementation. They are unlikely to be in place for they will not be in place for 2023.
Right.
They will take several years to be completed. Yes.
Any other questions? I just wanted to add to what Joe said about the D.C. trip. Extremely productive. The fact that we met with three of our congressional members in person and some key agency people at EPA, Bureau Rec. Well planned by Jolene, our team in D.C., and I think that will pay dividends. So it was a whirlwind trip, but it was good. And then finally on the safety, Joe, I in my tenure on this board, that has been paramount to our organ. There's a safety culture, so I think whatever we need to do, if we need extra resources from the board, I don't see that as an issue. But it would concern me, too, if to see upticks in that since it's part of our culture here. So
thank you, President Pauley.
Thank you for that. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
One item. I just want to inform the board that Fitch Ratings performed their annual surveillance these past couple of weeks. They do that annual surveillance just to kind of do a double check on our credit worthiness. So John, Thomas, and I met with Fitch, and we shared with them our past year financials, a five-year financial plan, informed them that we're undertaking a cost of service study right now, and we have a lot going on with the biannual budget coming up. But they did notify us back on November 10th that they have no material changes to our credit rating, so our AAA rating still is maintained. With this type of review, they do not issue a report, but they did inform us that our rating would be maintained. So I just wanted to report on that.
Very good. Nick?
Nothing today, thank you.
Laya?
Nothing from you this morning.
Matt?
Yeah, after last week's rain event, we saw enough flushing of debris and ash from the fire to begin capturing water at Grant Street Ponds. So by the time the water was clear enough to do that, there wasn't a whole lot left, but we did get 37 acre feet from the last event, and we're prepared for the rest of the season to grab whatever else we can get. That's it.
Very good. Any questions for any? All right. We will move on to our consent calendar. Any members of the board want to pull an item for separate vote or discussion?
I have item D of the action calendar.
On the consent.
I'm sorry. I have a conflict. I've done work for KB Home.
We're going to do a separate vote on
move all items except for item D.
Okay, can I, before we take a vote, though, I wanted to see if Mr. Hayes would come up. I know we discussed this in admin committee, but on item D, we're dissolving the community facilities district. We don't do that very often, so just so the board is clear of what we're doing here.
Yes, we've had a couple dissolutions this year, mainly related to older CFDs that were formed many years ago, and either properties exchanging ownership or new projects being planned. In this case, this one, we're dissolving a CFD 2006-51, so many years ago, and forming a new CFD 2022-95.
It's the same footprint, correct?
Same footprint, yes. Okay. The developer is new. KB Home will be developing this project. The previous developer was a smaller developer, and they sold the property, and then a new project was planned with KB Home. And then because of the timing and how many years have passed since the old CFD, they're extending the term of the tax, and Since the CFD was formed, no taxes were collected, no bonds were issued, so it's just a simple dissolution and then a reformation.
There were no costs to our ratepayers on doing this, correct?
Correct. No costs to our ratepayers.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Item E, you mentioned KB Home, so they're no longer involved.
Item E.
E, as in Edward?
Yeah, E is, I believe E is with LGI Homes.
LGI, okay.
Yes, I think since admin committee, the order changed a little bit.
Okay.
Item E is a JCFA, and the developer is LGI Homes. Okay. Item D, related to the dissolution and the establishment of a new CFD, that one is with KB Home, and KB Home is the current owner of the project, or the developer.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We have a motion by Director Corona for the consent calendar minus item D.
I'll second that.
Second by Director Slauson. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Let the record show Director Slauson has left the dais. I will make a motion to pass item D. Would you like to second that, Director Armstrong? May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson? Director Armstrong, sorry.
Aye.
All right, so that passes 3-0 with Director Record absent, and for the record, Director Slauson did not participate in that vote.
He tried to, though.
By promise. Very good. All right, we will move on to item 4, which is our action calendar. Item A is to approve and authorize Doheny Ocean Desalination Project Letter of Interest with South Coast Water District and the Municipal Water District of Orange County. Mr. Mawad.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. As this board is aware, we have been engaged in discussions with the South Coast Water District and MODOC regarding our interest in potentially participating in the proposed Doheny Ocean Desalination Project. And those discussions have led us to developing a letter of interest that you see here in front of you. And essentially, the letter of interest formalizes the ongoing evaluation process. And specifically, as part of this ongoing effort, we will be looking at what is the cost of our participation in the program, as well as what would the structure of our participation. Would it be a water supply purchase agreement, or would it be a JPA type of configuration? Also, in discussing this matter with MODOC and South Coast Water District, they've invited us to participate in ongoing discussions with the Metropolitan Water District. And as part of those discussions, we also need to confirm the water supply reliability benefits that we are seeking in participating in this program. Essentially, if there is an exchange of this water, that water would not be subject to shortage allocation during a drought. So all these matters will have to be discussed, including any potential financial upfront participation by EMWD and potentially benefits associated with that long term. The letter of interest lays out the approach, the intent, and our proposed path forward. We have presented this to South Coast and MODOC. They are supportive of us moving forward. And I do want to mention Lynnae has been a big part of this effort in advancing those negotiations. And I also do want to mention that as part of this recommendation today, not only to approve the letter of interest, but also to consider establishment of an ad hoc committee by this board that would follow up on this matter, provide guidance to the team and oversight. So we would also recommend that this board establish such ad hoc committee. I also wanted to mention finally that the general manager from South Coast Water District is on the line, Mr. Rick Shintaku. If you have any questions for South Coast, he is available to answer those questions. I don't know, Rick, if you wanted to add anything.
Let's see him. Sir, yep. Go ahead. Do we have him on?
Rick? Can you hear us?
Hi. Hi, can everyone hear me? This is Rick Shintaku, South Coast.
Yes. We want to know if you had any comments regarding this item.
Can anyone hear me?
Yes,
we can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. Yes, Rick Shintaku, South Coast Water District. Sorry about that, General Manager. I actually got somehow kicked off the internet, so I just called back in. And I heard, Joe, your intro, so I really appreciate it. I thought Joe did a very good job of explaining that. And I'm just here to answer any type of questions and really wanted to thank you, Joe, and your board for considering this project and digging into the information of this project. We just feel very honored that the Eastern Municipal Water District would look into this project. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Over.
Thank you, Rick.
Any questions or comments from board members? Director Armstrong?
Yeah, I just want to, again, just compliment you on the efforts. And it's, I know it's been a long time, and it doesn't move really fast all the time, but this is really good progress, and totally support the MOU or what is it?
Letter of interest.
Letter of interest. So, I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong.
No, and I'd just like to say for our guests from South Coast, this board is very committed to finding new and reliable water resources for our region. And I think this is a move in the right direction to kind of think outside the box and become partners potentially with some other water resources. So Director Armstrong and I have kind of led the effort here, and I think it's a great move in the right direction. So I do appreciate you calling in and joining us this morning. With that, would you like to make the motion on this?
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong. I'm going to second this one. Might I get a roll call vote, please?
Yes. President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes
4-0.
We'll go on to item B, which is to adopt a proposed resolution amending the administrative code as it relates to updating the consolidated schedules of rates, fees, and charges. Good morning, Mr. Adams.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. This morning, I'm honored to introduce Donna Kaminke, who is our finance manager in charge of budget and rates, and
very
she's
good.
Going to do the verbal presentation
All
this
right.
morning on
Very
the changes
good.
Our FPC. So, Donna.
The floor is yours.
Well, good morning, President Pauly and directors. One of the district's strategic priorities is fiscal responsibility and appropriate investment. Included in the initiatives to meet this priority is proportionate cost of service, which includes regularly evaluating the district's rates, fees, and charges to ensure everyone pays their proportionate fair share. Today's item relates to the annual update of connection fees, or financial participation charges, FPCs, and updating the admin code with a revised consolidated schedule of rates, fees, and charges. FPCs are collected from new development to pay for planned and existing facilities and to ensure that everyone pays a fair share of the district's infrastructure. As you may recall, the FPCs were last studied and adopted by the board in December of 2021. And as part of that study, the board also authorized the continuance of an annual adjustment based on the change in the ENR construction cost index. In accordance with this, the item for your consideration today represents this annual adjustment. The recommendation is for a 5.7% increase to our connection fees, based on the year-over-year change in the ENR construction cost index from September of 21 to September of 2022. Over the past year, the change in ENR peaked at 8.9% in March and has trended downward over the last several months. As a standard practice, the district did provide a 30-day written notice of the increases to the Building Industry Association of Riverside. In addition, Laura Nomura had direct communications with the executive officer of the Riverside BIA, Lou Monville, regarding the increase. They were understanding of the increases and appreciative of the advance notification. If approved, the increases would go into effect on January 1st of 2023. Exhibit A is the proposed resolution amending the EMWD Administrative Code. And Exhibit B highlights the changes made for the connection fee increases, as well as GO bond tax rates used for the July 2022 assessments. Staff's recommendation is for the board to adopt the proposed resolution amending the EMWD Administrative Code to update the consolidated schedule of rates, fees, and adjustments. And with that, I am happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions on this item?
I'm moving.
Item is moved by Director Corona,
second
by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
All right. We will move on. Thomas, we're going to adopt proposed resolution of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District setting a time and place for a public hearing regarding authorization of Los Alamos Hills Water System Financing Program.
Morning again, President Pauly, members of the board. As you may recall, Nick Kanetis has provided a few updates on this item on a number of occasions this year. First in May regarding the partnership with the City of Murrieta, and then another update in July regarding the project. At the July meeting, the board approved the interagency agreement with the City of Murrieta and also awarded a contract for engineering design services with Albert A. Webb and Associates. Today I'm honored to present the financing program and provide an update on the activities that have occurred over the last few months. By way of background and for context, the Los Alamos Hills community is located within an area commonly referred to as the Keyhole area. Joe spoke of the northern portion of this Keyhole area in his update this morning and updates related to community outreach in that section. The Keyhole area is an approximate 1,000-acre area that's not annexed into EMWD or Metropolitan Water District service areas. And the Los Alamos Hills community is to the left of the purple shade down at the bottom left portion of this Keyhole area. The City of Murrieta committed to contributing $3 million in ARPA funding, as Joe mentioned, referenced this morning. And we've received $1.5 million of that as of last month. The project has been designed as a looped water system extending from an adjacent pressure zone and will be capable of providing water to approximate 50 parcels that front the streets where this water system will travel. As noted on the slide to the left, the water system will include both 8-inch and 12-inch diameter pipeline. The oversizing of the 12-inch pipeline will help accommodate additional extensions in the future. Benefits of the water system include providing residents in this community with clean and reliable drinking water, as well as much-needed fire flow with the installation of fire hydrants. Residents previously spoke at city council meetings of having to truck in water due to dry well conditions. Shown on the image on the right is a 300-acre Liberty Fire in 2017. Santa Ana winds took a relatively small fire and increased the size and threatened some residential community. The fire hydrant installation along the looped water system will assist fire prevention and fire service in the need of an emergency for this rural community. For properties to connect and receive water service from EMWD, a dual annexation process is required to annex into MWD and EMWD service areas. EMWD is prepared to lead this effort and the application process and cover the processing fees, which is estimated at $19,000. In Nick's July update, he provided some additional context on the 14 to 18 month process, which included a series of steps, including CEQA activities, plat map preparation, recording, EMWD board approval, committee and board review and approval period with MET, and then also a review and approval period with LAFCO. Chris Teague is EMWD's expert in this area, and has already had discussions with LAFCO, and from my understanding has identified some opportunities to shorten this lengthy process. We're grateful to have Chris Teague on our team, and Michael Jordan once said, talent wins games, but teamwork and intelligence wins championships. If dual annexations had championships, I'm sure it would take Teague work to win one. It's anticipated that the fees and costs to annex will be advanced by EMWD with repayment to be made by the property owners along with the associated connection fees by way of the financing program, which I've outlined in just a few slides. There's benefit to annexing the whole area. The per-acre costs are significantly reduced when annexing the whole area and having EMWD lead the initiative. Many of the costs are based on a per-application basis, and so when you group those together, there's savings that occur. Shown on the far right, just for demonstration purposes, is a cost breakdown. If an average individual parcel, average size of 3 acres, were to pursue annexation. Now, certainly multiple properties could team up together and partner and achieve some savings with a grouped application, though it would be done without EMWD covering the costs and leading the effort, or in this case, teaguing the effort. That was the last one, President Pauly.
You are on a roll today, and I appreciate that, okay?
All right. I've included this parcel map on this slide for additional context of the community and the various homes that serve to benefit from the water system. A larger version of this map is included in the staff report as Exhibit B. And as noted there on the left, whole area annexation will be determined by community support, and 75% is the target goal commitment. Now onto the financing program. To assist property owners with financing the annexation and connection costs, staff has developed a financing program which is summarized here. The draft financing agreement is attached to the staff report as Exhibit D, and the agreement incorporates feedback we received from Special Counsel Michael Colantuno, as well as General Counsel Steve O'Neill and his team. The main provisions of the financing program include a 30-year term, 4% fixed interest rate, and collecting the payments via annual property tax assessments. The district has a lot of experience in assessing properties through Riverside County's fixed charge processing process, if you will, and so we're prepared to make that happen rather efficiently. Because many of the costs fluctuate based on acreage, we're prepared and ready to customize each agreement based on each parcel's unique, parcel-specific information, and provide amortization schedules identifying each annual assessment amount. Hay's work makes that happen. The table at the bottom shows the various components and estimates based on the various acreage sizes. Because the annexation, project completion, and ultimate connection will take some time, we're estimating conservative 2024 rates, which will serve as the maximum amount. Once final costs are identified, a true-up will occur, and staff will provide property owners with an updated, likely reduced amortization schedule. Now, property owners will have the option to select a meter size, and we'll already be customizing each agreement based on acreage, and we'll also be able to incorporate the meter size costs in those agreements. A handful of properties have already expressed interest in having a larger meter size, so we'll do that. And over the next several weeks, a couple months, property owners will be advised to seek input from their plumber based on factors related to their parcel. Because a connection won't occur for at least another year and a half, if a parcel owner decides to increase the meter size, based on changes to the property or change of preference, we'll be able to accommodate that request and provide a new amortization schedule with the updated amounts. And then just important to note on this slide, the rates are estimated for 2024, and the agreements and amortization schedules will be subject to the true-up. A couple more slides for you today. This first one on community outreach. We've had a very successful and extensive community outreach program led by Roxanne Roundtree. Individual letters were mailed in September, notifying the community of the partnership between the city and also advising them that contractors would be in the area soon to survey and assess the area. In October, letters were mailed inviting residents to a town hall meeting that were to occur on October 13th. At the October 13th town hall meeting, 34 members of the community attended, and EMWD and City of Murrieta team also attended. EMWD speakers included President Pauley, Nick Kanetis, Joe Mawad, and John Adams. Also in attendance was Director Corona and several staff involved with the project, including Chris Teague and Greg Kowalski and myself. City of Murrieta speakers included Assistant City Manager Ivan Haller. And since then, continued outreach includes phone calls, door hangers, certified mailings. Our PGA staff set up a website for additional information and resources available to the community. The town hall was a great opportunity for the team to meet with residents, learn about their needs and concerns, and answer questions by engaging in discussions. We took that feedback, made some minor adjustments to the financing agreements, and like I said, the financing agreement or the draft financing agreement is attached to the board packet. Just received an update this morning from Roxanne. Currently, we have 34 yeses, one no. A couple people are unsure based on the cost, and a couple people have multiple parcels in this community, and they're not sure which property they want to meter on, and you know, they're weighing the costs on everything. There's still about 10 property owners we are seeking contact. Some of them have out-of-state mailing addresses. A little bit more due diligence and outreach needs to occur for these remaining parcels. Now, there's a lot of moving pieces. I'll just take a moment to walk through the schedule. Things are really coming together, and I know the EMWD team, City of Murrieta, and the community is very excited for this project. The City of Murrieta and Eastern are really excited to partner together and come together to serve this community. Today we're seeking board approval of the financing program, the financing agreements, and set a public hearing for December 7th to allow the public to come protest if they choose to. A community signing day has been scheduled for December 1st, where notaries will be provided. Over the next couple weeks, the community will be able to review the draft agreements. We're prepared to get those out by the end of this week, updated with their parcel information. As I mentioned, the LAFCO and annexation process, Chris is prepared to advance that a little bit faster than what the traditional schedule calls for.
So could you define a little bit faster? Because this whole process is my greatest frustration. We have people without water, and we have what I call a bureaucratic process that, as you know, this is kind of an extraordinary circumstance. So what does that look like?
Yeah, from my understanding, and Nick, okay. I'll just defer to you.
Yeah, as Thomas said earlier, Chris has already engaged with LAFCO and Metropolitan, and he's identified, potentially many months. Let me say like four to 6 months that we could shave off this process. Okay. But I will stress, regardless of how much time he shaves off, that LAFCO process will be done before the physical construction of these facilities. So once the pipe's in the ground, ready to be connected, nobody's going to be waiting to make that connection because of LAFCO. So I'm confident that's going to happen. But Chris is doing a phenomenal job in laying the groundwork. The whole LAFCO process cannot begin until we know who we're annexing, because as a part of our initial application, we have to prepare plaps, maps, legal descriptions defining the areas. It's our hope and expectation it'll be the entire community, but until we have the final signed agreements and know what that headcount is, we can't submit our application. But everything's on track to move very rapidly once we're able to take that first step.
I appreciate you and Chris. I just, in this extraordinary case, think moving through some of the bureaucracy as rapidly as possible is best for the human beings that live there. So.
And Chris will be bringing an item to the board, I believe in February, to begin that annexation process once we have the parcels identified, what we'll be annexing. This wraps up my presentation. Staff recommendation, as I mentioned, is to approve the financing program, approve the financing agreements, also authorize general manager on the district's behalf with each property owner to execute the agreements subject to non-substantive changes, and then also set a public hearing date for December 7th at 9 a.m. I'm happy to answer any questions, and appreciate your time.
Questions for you. I do know we have a public speaker on this, which I will take after questions.
Okay.
Any questions for Thomas on this?
I have no questions.
Like I said, I really appreciate all the work on this. It needs to be done. Like I said, I'm just, as long as we can move through the LAFCO process at a extraordinary speed for these folks, that would be great. So, all right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I have a public speaker who'd like to speak on this item, Mr. Bob Landwehr. Please come forward, sir. Welcome. I appreciate you coming today. We give our public speakers 3 minutes, so if you could...
I'll try to be quick.
The floor is yours.
Community outreach. In early September 2022, a letter was mailed to the property owners. No, September 29th, we get a letter. And then don't hear anything. I look on the EMWD webpage, don't get any updates. And then I get a letter, we get a letter October 11th. And it says that we got a letter September 8th. No, we didn't get a letter September 8th. We just got one the end of the month. And we can come to this community outreach that's going to take place the following day on the 13th. Well, we can't attend because we have a commitment to go out of state. So then I'm forced to look at stuff. This is the first I've heard about it. We've lived there for almost 30 years. We weren't invited to a city council meeting. We weren't invited to... You guys talking about this before. This is the first I've heard about it. Mr. Paul, you were there. Did you hear anybody say that we're trucking in water? I just heard this guy say that's what took place. I listened to the council meeting. No one made that claim. What I did hear was Mr. Long say at the end, he challenged you, Mr. Pauly. He says this gets us to our 8 lots that he has that he needs to connect water to. I talked to the guy that owns the property behind me. We're encircled by this guy. He owns 2 parcels. We're rural residential. He wants to put in apartments. He needs water. It's being, in my opinion, portrayed that people need water out there. But I think there's an ulterior motive that people need to develop or want to develop their parcels in a different way. What's more insulting to me is I sent an email to Roxanne with questions, never got a response. That was on October 22nd. I then sent a certified letter with more questions. And never got a response. Where's the community outreach? What's written here before you today did not take place, at least not for us, for our family that lives at the corner. You make reference to CEQA. It's a CEQA project. Well, if it's a CEQA project, how come the property owners, the one that this project affects, weren't involved? I don't understand. This project's already paid for. It's already paid for. It's up and running. Aren't we supposed to be notified? Aren't we supposed to have a voice? I don't know what the answer is, but according to CEQA, as I read it, correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea is that we involve the community for if they're going to be affected by a project, we involve them to get their opinion, to let them know, to ask questions. I've never had the opportunity to ask questions. This project has already been decided. It's already been funded. Mr. Pauly, you were there at the council meeting. You heard Mr. Long tell you, I got eight parcels. I got eight lots I need to connect to, and this is going to be leveraged to do that. Is there another ulterior motive? If people really need water out there, where's the water trucks going up and down the street? Because that's not happening. People have wells, and they've been getting by. I'm just really disappointed. And again, I don't know what the answer is, but when you say that community outreach took place, I send an email, don't get a response. I send a certified letter, I don't get a response. And then here in front of you, you're told things that aren't true. So is it just a rubber stamp process? That we just take it on face value because someone said it happened, when in reality it hasn't? That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for attending. Thank you for your comments.
President Pauly, can I maybe just add some clarifications? I know there was a number of questions raised, but I just want to respond to a couple of questions raised. One is, on the CEQA process, we will prepare a CEQA document. In fact, the board letter in front of you does clearly indicate that once there is meaningful information, meaning the design is complete, as you've heard earlier, the design is still ongoing, it's under preparation. Once that information is prepared, then yes, absolutely, we will bring forward a CEQA document, and that will also be available for public review and public comment, and the public will have a chance to weigh in on the project through the CEQA process. As far as the public outreach, I was at the community meeting, and as indicated by the presentation earlier by Thomas, we had 34 members of the public attend, and in fact, overwhelming majority of the properties represented at the meeting did sign the letter of interest to participate. So I do believe the public outreach that was conducted did reach all of the affected property owners. I'm not sure about the timing. I will follow up to look at the timing of the letters. But the fact that we had 34 attend the public meeting is an indication to me that the communication did go out. With that, myself and the staff would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Director Armstrong.
Yeah. Thomas, just a question on, just make sure I understand it. Once the project is complete, it's the individual property owner's decision whether or not they want to connect to the service, connect service. So, and if they do and they do it all together, they get the advantages of the economies of scale to reduce their individual assessment. If they should decide not to and continue on their well, they're able to do that. And later, if they decide to connect, then they're going to have to go through the annexation process individually.
Yes. If they don't agree to do it initially with Eastern leading the process, then they would have to do that on their own and, you know, pay for the application costs and go through the administrative process. Now, if the whole area is annexed, And based on internal discussions we've had with the team, if there are select parcels that are completely against it, you know, only plan to live there, you know, X number of years and just don't, you know, have a fully functioning well and not interested, we're prepared to exclude those from the group application that we process. And later, if those parcels or if one of them decides to pursue annexation, they'll pay the fees, go through the process with LAFCO and MWD and Eastern, and they'll have to finance the costs without EMWD's financing program.
Yep. All right. Thanks.
So, again, the item before us today is to simply set a time and a place for the public hearing. Is that correct, Mr. Legal Counsel?
That's correct, Mr. Chair, as well as authorizing the documents or the actions that are set forth above that.
Could I amend this from the floor to add the provision that we send a certified letter to every parcel owner notifying them of the public hearing?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
We can.
I would like to do that so that we have gone above and beyond letting every parcel owner know of the public hearing. So
and
that would be my.
Sorry, President Pauly, I was actually going to mention, I believe we do have a certified letter in the works this week.
Okay.
But I'd
just like to
that.
Add it to the item here.
Yes.
To amend this, that we send a certified letter to every parcel owner so that they're aware of the public hearing on the 7th. And that will be the time that we will probably get into further discussions of the item. Is that correct? So I'm gonna make that motion.
I'll second.
Would you like to second by Director Corona? May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent from the meeting. Move on to item D, which is to approve and authorize award of contract amendments with Woodward and Curran for a program management service of $676,000 for California Environmental Quality Act support service of $113,000 for the Paris North Groundwater Program, an additional appropriation of approximately $1 million. And Ms. Kirk, you are presenting today. Very good. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, directors. I also wanted to acknowledge that we have Brian Dietrich here from Woodard and Curran in the audience.
Thank you for coming today. Appreciate it very much.
All right. Let's get this going. All right. So on this slide, you see here that the program location is within the Paris North subbasin within the San Jacinto groundwater basin. So as a reminder. So the program consists of 6 extraction wells within the city of Moreno Valley, 2 wells, which we call 65 and 66, in the northernmost part of the program, 2 wells, 206 and 207, and the centralized treatment facility in the central part of the area, and 2 wells, 208 and 209, in the southernmost part of the area. Conveyance pipelines will transport the raw water to the centralized treatment facility for treatment and distribution. The program also consists of 16 groundwater monitoring well sites. So this program initially received approximately $45 million from DWR's Prop 1 grant program, which requires a 50% cost share. In September of 2021, the State Water Resources Control Board approved an additional $5 million for the program due to increases in construction costs and supply chain disruptions. Then in February of this last year, Eastern requested an additional $12 million due to the increasing costs of the program components, as well as a 28-month extension from February 2023 to June 2025. The extension was approved by virtue of the entire grant program receiving a schedule extension for all of the Prop 1 awardees. Then recently, on October 3rd, 2022, the request of $12 million was approved, bringing the total grant award to $62 million. At the start of the program in early 2020, Eastern entered into a contract with Woodard and Curran through a competitive RFP process to provide program management services. Due to the changes that have occurred since 2020 and the need for engineering support, additional contract amendments were approved that added funds, scope, and time to the Woodard and Curran contract. This new proposed amendment is in response to the extension of the grant agreement to June 30th, 2025, in which the additional time requires additional funds for Woodard and Curran to continue providing program management services support to the district. The Amendment 4 proposal is for $676,500, which would bring the total contract amount to $3,505,910. Here is a list of the various tasks that Woodard and Curran will continue to provide to this program, with heavy emphasis on engineering support, bid support services, and engineering staff augmentation. So the next two slides show renderings of the facilities. So this first slide shows wells 206 and 207 equipping and the centralized treatment site in the city of Moreno Valley. Here are the well 208 and 209 equipping sites, also located in the city of Moreno Valley. This slide shows the overall program schedule. So we officially kicked off this program in the winter of 2020, which is not shown here. But now you can see where we are in the fourth quarter of 2022 by the green line labeled status, with the construction starting in quarter one of 2023 and ending in early to mid-2025, with a grant deadline being June 30th, 2025, which you can see with that red line at the end of the schedule. So the second request of this board letter is for an amendment to the CEQA Support Consulting Services contract, also with Woodard and Curran. An initial study and mitigated negative declaration was approved in May of 2020 for the pipeline phase two project, which included mitigation measures. However, additional scope is required to ensure compliance during construction. So a proposed amendment two is estimated to cost $113,609 for a revised total contract amount of $412,368. So the recommendation is shown on this slide. The first is to approve and authorize execution by the general manager or his designee of the district standard form of contract amendment with Woodard and Curran of Los Angeles, California, in an amount not to exceed $676,500, bringing their total contract amount to $3,505,910 for program management services in support of the Paris North Basin Groundwater Contamination Remediation and Prevention Program. And two, execution by the general manager or his designee of the district standard form of contract amendment with Woodard and Curran of Los Angeles, California, in an amount not to exceed $113,609, bringing their total contract amount to $412,368 for CEQA services in support of the Paris North program. An additional appropriation of $1,003,359, which brings the total program appropriation for Paris North to $54,323,814. So at this time, I have concluded my presentation, and I'm happy to address any questions you may have.
Any questions on this item?
Anything you'd like to make a comment if you, since you came? Come on up, come on up.
Sure. First of all, thank you for even considering our amendment here today. It's been a real pleasure working with your staff, and I think this deserves some acknowledgement because Paris North, as I'm sure you know, has seen some twists and turns along the way in the past 3 years, and there's been a real willingness on the part of your staff to be nimble and to be creative in coming up with solutions. So we're really looking forward in this opportunity to work with them the next 2 years and to finish this program out.
Very good. Appreciate you being in attendance today.
Sure. I'll make the motion.
Motion by Director Slauson. Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Yes. President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Again, thank you for being here. Great presentation. Thank you. We'll move on to item E, which is to approve and authorize an agreement with Environmental Science Associates for Climate Action Plan California Environmental Quality Act services in the amount of $99,700. Gordon, good morning.
All right. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start my presentation with just a quick review of some of the background of what we've done with respect to the Climate Action Plan so far. And so there are two main pieces of legislation that are the drivers for why we're developing a climate action plan. We have AB 32 from 2006 and SB 32 from 2016. So the first piece of legislation is basically setting a requirement for greenhouse gas emissions statewide to be reduced to 80% below 1990 levels by 2050. And there were some interim targets that were set for 2010 and 2020. And then the follow-up legislation, SB 32, in 2016, set an additional interim target of achieving GHG emission levels statewide of 40% below 1990 levels by 2030. And so what a climate action plan for a local agency such as ourselves is supposed to do is document how we would be taking action to support these statewide targets that were set by legislation. And in terms of what's in it for us as the agency to develop these plans and to commit to measures reducing GHG emissions is it, one, can improve our positioning for grant funding opportunities, or in some cases it's just a requirement for us to be eligible. And also, having a climate action plan will allow us to streamline our CEQA process, and we can address greenhouse gas emissions on a programmatic basis. So just some quick background on what a climate action plan, the requirements that we need to meet in order for our plan to be fully qualified. There's several requirements that require us to quantify our historic emissions and project out what our emissions will be in the future. We are also required to identify specific measures or actions that we can take to, again, help us move as a state towards the targets that were set by legislation. And then there's also some requirements for us to monitor what we have been able to achieve as we move forward in the future. And so that those are kind of the first five items that are summarized in this slide. And these are the items that we've actually completed and addressed to date with respect to our climate action plan. And so then the last requirement that we have to meet to get our climate action plan to a fully qualified status is we need to take the plan through an environmental review process, so take it through CEQA, and once that's complete, we need to adopt the plan by a public hearing. And so that's what we're going to address at the end of this presentation. But before I do that, I do want to give some further background on those first couple items and what we've done to address that to date. So in our climate action plan, in setting our emissions target, we are just looking at this interim target that was identified in SB 32 at this time. Obviously, at some point, we will need to go beyond and look at 2050. But right now, our plan is just looking at this 2030 planning horizon. And so we need to set that that emissions reduction. But the Air Resources Board does recognize that it's potentially difficult to quantify emission levels from 1990. Records are could be hard to find or may not be reliable. And so based on, they have a scoping plan that recommends how agencies can set their targets. And so based on our review, with the help of our consultant of this document, what we're targeting is a 50% reduction from our 2006 emissions levels. And that's kind of where we start having good data on our emissions. So based on their plan recommendations, that is how we're going to set our target. And we are going to target our emission reduction on a per capita basis. We are a growing area, and so this would allow us to offset some of the, just the inherent growth that happened in our service area and the associated emissions. And this approach is supported by case law. And again, we are only setting a target in this plan for the 2030 compliance year. And so the graph that I'm showing on the slide, just a quick summary of the data that went into this. The bar that's all the way on the left in the hatched, those are 2006 actual emissions. And so when you normalize that to our service area population and compare that to the growth that we projected in our 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, which is our publicly available long-range planning document, based on the growth that was forecast there, if you normalize those emissions to a per capita basis, you get our 2030 target, which is in that second bar from the left. So it's not, again, not quite halfway when you look at gross emissions, because we're looking at this on a per capita basis. And then in terms of the target that we're setting, so I have two bars on the right side of this graph here. The gray bar, you know, still kind of in the middle there, that's the business as usual forecast, again, based on the growth that that we projected in our 2020 urban water management plan for the year 2030. Sorry, the years are getting jumbled here. And I say this is a business as usual forecast because that is what our emissions are forecasted to be with no change by us and by the state. But we're actually going to get some help there because the state, you know, obviously this is a statewide goal, and so the state electric utilities have a requirement to increase their renewables in their power generation. And so the last bar on this graph shows the what we're going to call our baseline forecast. And this is what we are forecasting our GHG emissions to be, factoring in the actions that, you know, power utilities have to take, you know, outside of EMWD actions. And so as you can see, just by that alone, it gets us decently close to our target. And so, you know, I think the conclusion from this slide is that, you know, we're on track to meet this goal, and there are clear actions that we can take to get to that target. And so I just want to give some additional detail on this slide in terms of where we are moving forward. So the solid portion of this graph shows our historic actual emissions. So you can see we've been on this downward trend already. And obviously the board is aware of, you know, many of the investments that we have taken in that regard, for example, with you know, significant installation of solar facilities and the like. And just a quick explanation, the solid line currently ends in 2017 because at the time that we started this effort, that was the most current available data. And so, that's why the actual stopped there. And so that top dashed line, again, that's the baseline forecast where we account for, the state's, renewable portfolio, requirements for, the electric utilities. And so, again, that gets us close to that 2030 emissions target, denoted by the red line. And what we've done in our climate action plan is we've identified a number of core measures, including the conversion of gas engines that were identified in our 2014 energy management plan, some energy efficiency improvements in our facilities, as well as some water conservation. And I'll go into more detail on that in a later slide. And just taking those three core measures, many of which are already in progress or even complete, that gets us to that dotted blue line. And the reason why these are identified as the core measures is because taking these actions will get us to that 2030 target that we're looking to set in this document. The other thing that we did in this plan is, you know, the regulation does go out to 2050, and so ESA, our consultant, did take a look at some potential additional measures that we could take, just on a speculative basis to see where we could possibly end up, and so that's denoted by that dashed green line. And so you can see that there's additional actions that would be available to us if that's needed. So again, just this slide is just a zoom in specifically on the 2030 compliance year, showing kind of some of the same information that we've already been discussing. Again, the bar on the left shows our target emissions set on a per capita basis. That business as usual line is what our emissions would be without any actions by us or the state. And then the middle blue bar is where we would be with no action on EMWD's part. Light blue bar shows that we can meet our target with just taking core measures, and then, you know, the potential for additional reductions on the left. And this is for the 2030 compliance year, which is that 40% below 1990 levels, so halfway. And then a speculative look at 2050, this is that 80% reduction target. So you can see here that when we have that more stringent target in 2050, we will need to do take some action beyond what's been identified for 2030. They're not actions that we're committing to at this time, but you can see even on this graph, looking at some possible actions that we can take, we do have a path to get there eventually. And so I mentioned, you know, we have these core measures that are either underway or already completed. And so And as I mentioned, we have a 2014 energy management plan, and in that energy management plan, some of our gas engines, not all of them, just some of them, were identified as candidates for conversion, covering anywhere from blowers at our RWRFs to, you know, some of our booster stations, lift stations, wells, and the like. Many of those conversions, again, have already been completed, and we have an annual allocation set aside to convert additional gas engines moving forward. But again, this plan is not calling for us to replace all of our gas engines. There's some energy efficiency measures that were also identified in that 2014 plan, including things like LED lights and higher efficiency appliances. And then the last core measure that was identified is continued water conservation. I mentioned earlier that our GHG emissions in the Climate Action Plan were based on our growth projections in our 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, again, which is a publicly available long-range planning document. And so one of the things that we did, if the board will recall, in the Urban Water Management Plan is we were conservative in our demand projections, in that we didn't assume that the improvements in water use efficiency that we've seen over the last several years would necessarily continue. Now, having said that, we do expect them to continue, and in fact, we expect to get more efficient given the state requirement to do additional water conservation. And so what this graph on the right shows is that top bar shows the demands that we projected in our 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, and the middle lighter line shows the water demand level that we would need to get to you know, hit that core measure threshold, and then the green bars with the hatching shows where we would get to in terms of water use at today's levels of water use efficiency. So again, we're on track to meet that goal. And as I mentioned, you know, we actually would expect our water use efficiency to improve as we approach 2025 and into that 2030 timeframe because of some of the other drivers that we have from the state. As I also mentioned earlier, we did take a look at potential options that would be available to us beyond those three core measures. Again, we don't need them for 2030, but we would possibly need to pick from some of these options to meet a 2050 target when the time comes to evaluate that. So some of these options include the expansion of our solar generation facilities, the retention of some of our renewable energy credits that we're selling. At the moment, again, we don't need to do that for 2030, but it's something we may need to look at for 2050. Additional electrification, I mentioned that there's an annual allocation that we have in place to look at that. The procurement of clean energy or renewable natural gas, conversion of our fleet to zero-emission vehicles, and again, there's some legislative requirements that, you know, we would possibly need to comply with anyway. And then the implementation of BMPs for our construction projects. And so the reduction that is possible with taking some of these measures, again, puts us on track to meet a 2050 target. So in terms of the next steps of our climate action plan process, what we're looking to do is complete the CEQA process for the actions that we've discussed in the CAP for 2030. And so this is what we're going to, this will allow us to complete that environmental review and then go to that public hearing that I mentioned at the beginning and get this CAP fully qualified so that, you know, then we can streamline our CEQA and all that fun stuff. And so as part of that, we would need to continue our annual greenhouse gas inventory, the reporting that we do associated with that. As I mentioned, once the CEQA is done, we will need to hold that public hearing to review that environmental process and the you know, take any comments on the plan, that sort of thing. And then once we have the climate action plan in place, as I mentioned, there's a monitoring component that's required. And so just moving forward into 2030, we would need to track our progress towards the goals that we set. And so just some quick additional details on that CEQA process. What that's going to be is just an evaluation of those core measures that we've established in our CAP. And you know, once that's done and we adopt in a public hearing, then we can address, for all our CEQA projects, we can address the GHG emissions component programmatically. It'll help us meet those grant proposal requirements. And our consultant, ESA, believes that we can fulfill all these requirements with an MND, and their proposed scope is just under 100,000, as seen on this slide. And so the recommendation for the board is that we approve this agreement with ESA to go ahead and take this plan through CEQA, and then once that's done, we will bring the plan as well as the CEQA document before the board for final approval and adoption. So that concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Let me ask you one. Give me the thumbnail sketch on who ESA is, and have we've done business with them before, but just remind me who they are.
Yeah, they're an environmental consulting firm. We work with them in the past. They actually do a lot of CEQA work for us.
Okay. They're one of the big nationwide ones.
They are, President Pauly, and they were competitively selected for our on-call environmental services, if I'm not mistaken, Linnea.
Yeah, and they also completed the
regional
cap. Yeah, thank you. Cap for WRCOG.
Okay.
So, yes.
It was more of a perfunctory question, just to let people know that they are a big nationwide firm we're hiring.
Yep.
And you're going to manage the contract, correct?
I've been managing the development of the Climate Action Plan, and we're going to turn this over to Joe Broadhead, our CEQA expert.
Very good. Do I have a motion? Motion by Director Slauson, second by Director Armstrong. Megan, a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Pass 4-0 with Director Record absent. Tell you what, Amanda, why don't we take your item, and then after that we will take a 10-minute break. Sound good? So we're going to go to informational items. The first one is Eastern Municipal Water District Education Program Overview. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm pleased to be here this morning to give a quick overview of our education program. Considering the topic, we will be testing you at a later date on this information, so please take notes.
And be quiet while you're in class.
Yes. We don't want to pull a card, okay? So just a brief overview. Our current education program serves 11 school districts and private schools within our service area. That's approximately 60,000 students, give or take the year. We provide field trip programs, classroom after school program presentations, teacher lesson plans, poster contests for our grades TK through 5, write-off contest for grades 6 through 8, theater assemblies, career days, and then for our lifelong students who may no longer be in the classroom, we do bird walks a couple Saturdays every year. This year, we have decided to expand several of these programs to offer a little bit more flexibility for teachers and students. Historically, we have only ever offered field trips for classes at our San Jacinto Regional Water Reclamation Facility. But we have seen a need to expand that to talk more about the water side of things. And so this year, we introduced virtual and in-person tours for middle school students at our Hemet Water Filtration Plant. And then also for our high school students, we have started to provide tours of our desalination complex, mainly the Paris 2 building. It's new, it offers great views, and allows students to have a much more complex understanding of water filtration and local supplies. In addition, the teacher has the option, the high school teacher has the option to decide to come back here to the boardroom on Tuesdays for an extended presentation on careers in the water industry. And then we're asking staff, every week it's a different staff, a different panel of staff, to come and provide a career panel to students so they can ask questions. How did you get there? What do you do? It's a diverse group of staff, so everybody from water operations to somebody in the lab to maybe somebody in public affairs. And it just gives students a chance to see that there's an opportunity for them no matter what their path is after high school. Additionally, we've also created an online reservation system that allows for ease for teachers just to go in, select what they want to do. We get an email, we reach out to them, confirm everything, and it's all set and ready to go. So you can kind of see right there in that green box, field trips by the numbers. I do want to note that we saw an increase, substantial increase during our completely virtual years for COVID, because we could stack a virtual presentation one after another after another, whereas doing in-person presentations one after another just isn't possible. This year, and actually last year, we did start introducing some new contests. These contests are designed to really to provide more options and opportunities for students that allow us to use mediums that we know our students are already using. So that means video production, video contests. We know that we can capture attention, especially with our younger generation, if we're doing a 90-second video rather than a long presentation. And so we're asking them, we're putting that power in their hands to say, okay, we would tell you about this. Now we want you to take that and put it into a video format. So as you can see here, we had our first video contest last year, and we honored that video winner here. This year, we are also working on, have already developed and are launching in the coming weeks a gaming contest. So students who are computer inclined, program inclined, and college students will have the opportunity to create a video game that really targets tap water versus bottled water. And we'll take that, have it on our website, have it available for teachers. We've also introduced the Water Graduates Program, which is a partnership with the conservation team through a grant through Metropolitan Water District. It does have the potential to impact 13,000 students in our service area. Metropolitan required that this program be offered to Title I schools, which we have 96, and 96 Title I schools for fifth grade students within those schools. The program consists of a four-part unit that takes students everywhere from conservation all the way down to careers. And once they complete that unit, the teachers complete that with their class, they then come on a field trip, either at EMWD, Western Science Center, or another location. We're also really excited to be kind of on the ground floor of some new career technical education programs that began this year. West Valley High School in the Hemet Unified School District began a Water Pathways program this year, but they started development and kind of marketing it to students in the summer rather than the fall with the beginning of school year. And so they approached us. They said, hey, we want to do this. We were like, we're here. We're your industry partner. We want to be on the ground floor with you on this. And so the funding that they got to start this program allowed for them to have a early summer kind of orientation to what water technology pathways would look like for kids that enrolled. And we hosted them for that entire week, with the exception of a couple of days. It was actually 2 weeks, with the exception of a couple of days where they went through tours. They did a mini Water Leaders Academy. We set up what we call speed networking, where we had departments from all over the district come, and kids got to spend 2 minutes with each department to learn about what they do and what the careers are. You're going to hear that careers are kind of the common theme here, because we're really looking, as we expand these programs, to find those pathways and bridges from once they graduate. We don't want to lose touch with these members of our community now. They're no longer students, but now they're potential employees. We want to keep them engaged with us on water issues. We know that Hemet Unified School District is looking to expand this program to another high school next year, and we will once again be there to be their industry partner. We've also been approached by Temecula Valley Unified School District. They are looking to create a utilities pathway. So they contacted us, Rancho, SoCal Gas, and SCE, and we're kind of working with them through what a utilities pathway would look like for their entire district. And then we also have Birdwalk amenities. We provide a new safety video, viewing platform, a graded walking path, and then informational signs, just to enhance that experience for those individuals that do take part in the Birdwalk. A couple Saturdays every month. I know Director Pauly has been out several times. And these have been well received, and those are well loved by participants that go out there. And this is in partnership, these Birdwalks, with the Audubon Society. So I've mentioned building that pathway and that bridge. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. We already know that there are community groups and partnerships out there, or group programs out there, that are working with students on what happens next after high school. And so we want to be a partner with them on that. We want to play an integral role in how they they support students in the community. So we are working with Moreno Valley College, Moreno Valley Trio, the California Family Life Center, Mount San Jacinto, really to find out what is it that they need, what can we provide or adjust here, what can we grow within our education program to really meet the needs of students, to get them engaged for future internships, apprenticeships. So this goes beyond the education program. It goes beyond public affairs. It becomes an agency-wide project. And as part of these early discussions, we're just engaging them on the basics of EMWD. In fact, we had several members of these groups join us for the last Water Leaders Academy. So those relationships are what are key to kind of building out this program. Additionally, we know that our program is only as strong as if it meets the needs of our teachers and students, and so we are amping up our teacher engagement with end-of-year surveys, summer sessions, and or also quarterly communications. Teachers, things change every day for them, and so we want to make sure that we are front of mind, they know we're a resource, and we're here to provide help in whatever way we can. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Director Slauson.
I have one question. What is Moreno Valley Trio?
So the Trio program is actually housed within the college, but it serves kids all the way down into elementary school, middle school, and high school. And it's almost like I don't want to call it an after-school program. It's much more than that. But it's meant to set up kids for success. So they have family and parent nights. They'll have career days. They have special projects that help kids kind of provide support outside of the classroom. And it's actually not just, there's also a Trio in the Hemet San Jacinto Valley as well that we're looking to connect with.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah. Director Armstrong?
Yep. No, I really like this game edition that you're doing. I can't wait to see what comes out of that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's really good. And it'll be really interesting to see if any of this leads to career choices in the future. And so it's very comprehensive.
So I will say, Director Slauson, we had March Mountain High School here. They came in they went through a DSAL tour, and they're in MoVal, and they came back for a career panel. And one of the kids looked at the photos up there, and he goes, I'm going to be on that wall one day. And I said, I like it. I like it. But he lives in Moreno Valley. He's coming for you.
You better watch it. You better watch it.
No, I mean, I am a huge fan of our educational outreach. I think it is developing future employees. It's not our core mission, but it is an important mission as part of this general community that we do this. So I congratulate you on a great job with this and look forward to us being more engaged in the educational community. I think everything we do that you just described is really cutting edge and setting us apart from probably we're setting the best practices for that, and that's what really excites me. So thank you, April, your whole team, for a great job on this. Great presentation.
Thank you very much.
All right. With that, why don't we take about a 10-minute break? Convene. And we are going to go to item 5B, which is an update on our commercial, industrial, institutional, non-functional turf, portable water irrigation ban.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. As the presentation is getting pulled up this morning, I'm going to be providing you an update on really the response from our commercial, industrial, and institutional customers to the ban on irrigating non-functional turf with potable water. As we've reported previously, the state did pass emergency regulations earlier this year. Part of those regulations did include a ban of irrigating non-functional turf with potable water. Now, this ban did have some exceptions to it. Areas that are irrigated with recycled water are not part of the ban. Areas that are considered functional turf, like our parks, our recreational areas, and other areas of functional turf are not included in the ban. And also, it's important to note that the promotion of irrigation of trees and shrubs is still ongoing, but we're working to identify areas where we can separate those irrigation systems to avoid watering non-functional turf. The ban also excludes turf that is certified as low water use variation, but there are specific requirements and proof of that certification that are required to be excluded from the ban. April's team, including Aaron Guerrero, have been doing a lot over the last couple of months with a ton of outreach to our customers, including three mailings to over 2,600 CII customers, emails to those customers where we have that type of contact information. We've also conducted a series of workshops with direct outreach to customers, with a focused workshop actually on HOAs. We also have made presentations to city councils and also tried to really inform our partnering agencies at the staff level when we have our regular coordination meetings and really encouraging their participation and their enforcement of the ban as well. We've conducted one-to-one business outreach as well as flyer distributions to Chamber of Commerce within the service area. And we've also dedicated a portion of our website to, again, provide additional information on the ban. What we've asked our customers to do is to shut off irrigating all non-functional turf and also encouraging them to take advantage of the rebates and programs to permanently replace non-functional turf. Although this current action is in response to the emergency regulation, as this board has been very supportive and approved programs and funding throughout the years, non-functional turf replacement is an important aspect of our water use efficient goals here at the district. And so we are encouraging that permanent replacement of non-functional turf while there is this heightened awareness during this emergency regulation. So how have our customers been doing? Our conservation team has been tracking and monitoring the response and the water use for customers that we've identified as having non-functional turf. And of the accounts that we've identified with non-functional turf, 62% of those have reduced water use. We've also been able to identify that over 2.5 million square feet of non-functional turf is now not being irrigated based on our call to action. We've also seen over 140,000 square feet of non-functional turf replaced or permanently removed since July 2022. And part of our response to our customers responding to our ask is the distribution of Doing Our Part signs. And over 150 of those signs have been distributed to those customers that have shut off irrigation to non-functional turf. We also continue to see a high engagement in our rebate programs, including customers that have converted to drip from spray over 31,000 square feet, as well as participation in our large landscape voucher program. As I mentioned, we've also had some targeted coordination with some of our partner agencies, including the City of Hemet. We've conducted site visits with their landscape and maintenance staff, as well as meetings with their public works staff, water and wastewater superintendent, and their acting city manager. We've provided them an overview of the current drought conditions, as well as the severity of this drought and the non-functional turf ban. There are opportunities in the City of Hemet where we really wanted to ask for their assistance in contributing to the response. And I'm happy to report that just a few weeks ago, their city council did approve additional funding for turf replacement within the city. So we're really happy to see their participation and their commitment to our ongoing challenges. We also have had some focused outreach to HOAs in our service area, including direct mailers to almost 400 HOAs, emails, website and social media posts, as well as a dedicated workshop that I mentioned that focused on the consideration for HOAs. Although the emergency ban is not directed at residential customers, HOAs are included. And during our, I think it was our last update, there was a specific question about HOA's responsibility and or the authority that they have that may not necessarily align with the emergency regulations or permanent water use efficiency strategies. And what we'd like to share with the board is that HOAs actually cannot enforce guidelines that prohibit the use of drought-tolerant plants or the use of synthetic turf as a replacement to existing grass. An HOA cannot issue a fine for reducing or eliminating the irrigation of grass during a state or local emergency, and they cannot enforce guidelines that prohibit compliance with local water use efficiencies. And as I mentioned, they are included in the state ban that is focused on non-functional turf for CII customers.
But after the drought emergency is over, if somebody was to have went through an effort and removed grass and convert, are they good or do they have?
They are good.
They're good.
HOA cannot come back and ask them to replace it with grass or so forth. No, that's actually a state that was passed by the state after the last drought.
Can they put the grass back in again then?
Who? The HOA or the customer?
Either one.
I mean,
they just got paid to take it out, and it's a lot cheaper. I mean, they're getting way more money than it costs to buy new sod.
So an HOA can't require an individual homeowner or resident to put grass back in. If somebody on their own applies for a turf rebate, and they convert it back to grass at some point, or somebody, this is what I see a lot in my neighborhood, somebody else buys the home and then takes out the drought tolerant and puts in grass. Right now, there's no mechanism to necessarily prevent that. If it's the same person that then tries to come back for a rebate again, then that would be flagged. But if it's a new customer, a new account, we don't have a way to prevent that. Interestingly enough, Southern Nevada Water Authority has taken action to prevent that by putting a lien on the property and actually kind of they become the owners, if you will, of the property. And that's part of the condition of participating and receiving the rebate. So not sure if Metropolitan, because those turf rebates come through Metropolitan, not sure if Metropolitan may explore that in the future, but there is nothing to prevent an individual customer from replacing their drought tolerant with grass in the future, even if they got a rebate.
But maybe to that question, Director Corona, in terms of our focus currently, it is on CII customers, not necessarily the individual residential customer. And we want to help our CII customers convert permanently to more drought-tolerant landscaping. And what Linnea is going to speak to right now on this slide is actually the mechanism that I believe that will help make this change permanent, which is change in their water budget from an ET factor of 0.7 down to 0.5. So those CII customers that down the road after the emergency condition is lifted that want to go back, let's say, to non-functional turf, they're going to be consistently exceeding their water budget. So we believe that's a mechanism to help encourage permanent transformation for the CII customers.
I don't know if there's anything else to say on this slide.
Oh, no,
I'm just kidding. Joe said it very well, actually. No, thank you, Joe. You know, in terms of the next level of enforcement and encouraging the permanent replacement of non-functional turf, we are looking to reduce water budgets for those customers that still have non-functional turf effective on December 1st by reducing their ET factor from 0.7 to 0.5. And again, if customers do exceed that budget, they will be financially penalized through their water bill. So this is kind of the first step in a stronger level of enforcement. Up until this point, we've tried to be very collaborative, encouraging, informing, educating. But at this point, as Joe mentioned, with additional restrictions likely coming down from Metropolitan in early 2023, we really need to be sending a stronger signal to those customers that have non-functional turf and have not yet been willing to participate in ceasing their irrigation. We do recognize, though, that there are customers that potentially will be notified that maybe maybe not have non-functional turf. So we do have a waiver process that's available online. So they can provide pictures and other information that is relevant for us to make a determination as to whether or not they're eligible for the reduction in their water budget. And we will be continuing to monitor the response to that that incentive through the billing system. And if we are still seeing customers that are not willing to comply with the ban, we may further consider enforcement actions that are allowed by the state regulation that could take the form of additional penalties or fines per day. Metropolitan is continuing also to look into their involvement in non-functional turf replacement. As I mentioned, they're the regional entity that provides the rebates. However, they are currently looking at whether or not a permanent ban within the service area makes sense for them as an agency as well. They also recently conducted a survey on how agencies are responding to the emergency ban, what enforcement actions they are taking. And of that, the response from the wholesaler agencies was that the consensus was a lot of encouraging retailers to comply, providing educational and outreach materials. Retailers, again, majority of them taking the education approach. The eight agencies reported as taking active enforcement or issuing fines. Two agencies were developing permanent ban ordinances, and then nine of the agencies weren't participating at all, which they reported was due to a lack of resources really to implement and enforce the ban. Metropolitan has also developed a dashboard tool to try to help agencies identify areas of non-functional turf. We've reviewed and provided feedback on that tool. And next month, Joe will actually be presenting our efforts to date and our accomplishments on enforcing the non-functional turf irrigation ban at the next member agency managers meeting. We have ongoing efforts, again, more on the permanent side of non-functional turf replacement, which includes a study with UC Riverside where we're exploring funding options. One of the limitations or the barriers that we often hear from our customers is the upfront funding, and that can sometimes be a financial constraint provide the funding up front. It sometimes can take weeks or even months to get the rebate back from Metropolitan. So we are working with UCR on a study to explore whether or not a program similar to our Recycled Water Accelerated Retrofit Program, where we provide funding to help facilitate the removal of non-functional turf, could make sense for our CII customers. We are also currently working on a grant application for additional funding for our non-functional turf initiatives. We are continuing to do outreach to our CII customers. We anticipate having additional workshops in 2023 as our enforcement actions continue to evolve, considering the drought conditions. We also are working on an RFP to get additional as-needed support and staff to help with the monitoring and enforcement. We will continue to identify areas with only non-functional turf being irrigated with potable water and really try to work with those customers to assess options for maintaining the irrigation of trees and other shrubs or plants while eliminating the irrigation of non-functional turf. As we mentioned, we will be updating water budgets, and we will be tracking those exceedances to help us better identify people that are not complying with the ban and perform additional outreach and assess fines as needed. We'll continue encouraging the permanent replacement of non-functional turf and our coordination with Metropolitan. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any additional questions.
Linnea, if I can add maybe one more thing. Can we go back to the slide that discusses the UCR study? I'm really looking forward to bringing the findings of that effort with the professor, Dr. Kurt Schwabe, who's been assisting us. We've seen the preliminary results of his efforts, at least staff has. What he's done, he's gone back to look at customers who have in fact converted from non-functional turf to drought tolerant landscaping, as well as the combined effects of water reduction when you add weather weather controllers, irrigation controllers, or drip irrigation. The initial findings are significant. There appears that our customers who have undertaken those efforts have reduced their water consumption by 30%. So what that means is there's an opportunity. If customers are seeing that level of water reduction, meaning reduction in their bills, then going forward, maybe there's an opportunity for on-bill financing, where ultimately we would be made whole for funding those costs, and ultimately there would be a payment back to us through those water savings. So that's what we're hoping to achieve out of this, and early next year we'll be bringing those findings to this board as we continue to look at ways that we can assist our customers convert from non-functional turf. Thank you.
No questions. Excellent presentation. Appreciate it very much. I will tell you, from being back in D.C. the last couple of days, this was a topic that everybody wanted to know about, and especially you. If you're from the East Coast, you don't understand it, and Joe did a great job of explaining it to several people that don't quite get it. But it was, I think you'll characterize it, was a topic of hot discussion is the non-functional turf and what we're doing as a leader again in it. So very much appreciate your efforts on it.
Thank you.
All right. That will bring us to our receive and file items. I will make a motion to receive and file. Second by Director Corona. I get a roll call vote on these, please.
President Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
That's 4-0 with Director Record absent. Calendar review. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I have one event for your consideration this morning. That is going to be on Friday, January 27th in 2023. It is the Chamber of Commerce for Moreno Valley, their installation awards banquet. So, and that information is located in the middle of your packet this morning. On to page 2 is the board members' master calendar for the next 2 weeks. You guys are busy again. So please read the information and let me know if there's any updates or changes that need to take place. So on the top of page 3 are the upcoming conferences and events. We kick off with Tuesday, November 29th is the beginning of the Aquafall Conference. Then on Thursday, December 9th is the County of Riverside State of the County Address. That will be at 8 o'clock. And then there's two events on Friday, December 16th. One is the Riverside Water County Task Force is having their year-end tour, which is at 8 o'clock. And then here, EMWD is hosting the Water Education Poster Contest inside the boardroom, and that'll start at 10 o'clock. So continuing on page 3, the board meetings and board committee meetings are all on schedule, minus the one alteration of the retirement trust is Monday, December 5th. And then at the top of page 4 is the interagency meetings through January, and they all are on schedule. And then we have our list of our EMWD's offices are being closed, and that's going to be Thursday, November 24th, Friday, November 25th, then Monday, December 26th, and Monday, January 2nd. Are there any questions regarding the calendar review?
No.
That concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We will go to our board attendance reports. We'll start with Director Armstrong.
I attended the CalDSEL Executive Committee, and just really a number of administrative things related to the bylaws and budgets and financial performance. Also wanted to mention that at the AQUA conference on Wednesday, November 30th at 6 p.m., the CalDSEL is hosting a mixer there. So for those who are attending, I hope you attend that. And then the other thing that went over is they do always get an update on the Doheny project. And so I'm sure we might be on top of it already. But I guess then one of the next steps is that it's going to be heard by the State Lands Commission on December 9th. And it has to do with, I think, closing the Doheny State Beach for some period of time during the project. So I don't know if we're going to send, I don't know if they've asked for letters of support or not, but it might be something to check with.
We'll do that.
Yeah. Dr. Armstrong. That's my update there.
On that note, I will just note, as the other day, we were in Senator Feinstein's office meeting with John Watt, a very senior water staffer, who I never thought I'd hear this, but actually said, well, we're looking for what CalDESAL's position is on it. So just a little shout-out to CalDESAL there that you have senior Feinstein staffers wanting to know what their position was. So I thought that was very good for the organization. Director Corona.
Yes, I attended the Northern Key Development Workshop. Linnea did a great job of explaining to folks what was going on. A little different than the other workshop that we did on the annexation. It still continues to surprise me how people don't understand how their roads and sewers and everything else get funded and built. But anyway, for the most part, it was very positive. The Rancho meeting, not too much going on other than it was Angel Garcia's last board meeting, and they did spent a lot of time giving him tributes and a little emotional on his part. But it was a good meeting. I just wanted to say that. J.D. Harkey was elected to the Rancho Board, and J.D. is Ben Drake's son-in-law, who's a good friend of mine, and I'm very happy to see that he's going to be on board, farmer and vineyard guy, and really, I think he's going to be a really good addition to the Rancho Board. Of course, all the incumbents got reelected, which is also very good. So, anyway, that's my report.
Very good. Thank you so much. I attended our Water Leaders Academy. Again, great, great job by the staff here. I think that is an important program. I think we've got it down to the one-day program. I think it's very informative. I've actually had a few people give me some feedback on it from Supervisor Washington's office that enjoyed it. So I just hope we continue that. I think it's great outreach. French Valley Community Fair, we had the water truck, a booth out there. Consuela and Alma did their usual fantastic job of interacting with constituents. We strategically, they placed us next to the In-N-Out burger truck. So and In-N-Out
awesome
was
spot.
Not giving away beverages, so there was a continuing line of double-double folks coming right by and getting our water. So, but we actually had a lot of the CEO of the county came over and chatted with us. Supervisor Washington did. Great, great event, and again, just outstanding staffing. WRCOG, regular meeting, not much to report there. Had a good update with the general manager. I did have a meeting with Kurt Wilson, the executive director of WRCOG, about future water participation in that agency and just a general overview of water. He had recently gone on the Colorado River water trip and is kind of a regional leader in things. I think he really enjoyed it and really got a good education on that. So that was a good meeting. Winchester Mac, we had the speaker who was from flood control, so that was interesting. Gave an update on Eastern. And then as Joe discussed, we just got back from D.C. the last couple of days, and I can just say I think it was probably one of the more productive D.C. trips that we have had, and the ability that we, out of our four members of Congress in our delegation, Congressman Ruiz, we met with a senior staffer on. The rest, we had in-person meetings with the members of Congress, and we're really gaining a lot of support. And then, again, with the agency meetings, I think we have I think they really enjoyed the information. Again, it was non-functional turf. It was a lot of things that they need to be brought up to speed on. So I just want to commend both Vanscoy and Associates, Julian Walsh, and our general manager for putting together. I think it was a busy trip, but it was jam-packed and well worth it. So, Director Records absent, so Director Slauson.
Had the meeting with Joe Mawad on the 10th, and it's always informative and nice to be able to get into some of the weeds there. Did not have RCC Foundation meeting yesterday, did not have SAPA meeting yesterday, and there was no chamber meeting today. There was a chamber meeting today instead of next week, for the board wake up or Marina Valley wake up, but I have a chamber board meeting on the 30th next week. That's it.
Very good. Director's comments or future agenda items? Director Corona.
I just wanted to say how honored I am to have been reelected to serve my constituents in Division 2 and to continue the next 4 years working with my colleagues here on the board and with the great staff that we have here at Eastern Municipal Water District. And thanks for the poster in the lunchroom.
Very good. Happy to have you here for the next 4 years. So with that, anybody else? All right. With that, I'll ask legal counsel if we need to have a closed session today.
We do, Mr. Chair, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss one item of potential litigation and also to discuss another item of existing litigation, Garin versus Eastern Municipal Water District.
All right, very good. We will take a minute or two to switch over to closed session.
I think we're ready.
All right. Can I get the General Counsel to report out?
Thank you. The Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss existing litigation, Garin versus Eastern Municipal Water District. A report was given to the board, no formal action was taken, and the board also met pursuant to the same code section to discuss one item of potential litigation. Instruction was given to staff, no formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. We will stand adjourned until Wednesday, December 7th at 9 a.m. Thank you.